Hello, and welcome to the EuroWhat, episode number 83 for the week of April 6, 2020. I'm Mike McComb, and I'm joined today by Ben Smith. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Mike.
And our special guest, Andre Durham. Hey, Andre.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We are a group of Americans trying to make sense of the Eurovision Song Contest, and this week, we'll be talking about how the fandom is coping without a contest this year. Welcome back to the show, Andre.
Thanks. I am a big fan, so I'm always happy to come back and celebrate Eurovision with y'all, even if we can't do it in May.
Yeah. Longtime listeners of the show may remember Andre from, I believe it was the episode right after the 2019 contest.
Yes.
And I think there was a tornado or something happening in your neck of the woods.
Yeah. Yes, Oklahoma, so tornadoes can happen at any time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, next time we will try to have you on the show when there's not some sort of natural disaster happening. Or We'll try.
Yeah, especially after all the money I spent to get to Rotterdam and all those tickets were more expensive than normal this year.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but
waiting for that refund.
Yeah. So you were planning on being in Rotterdam for the contest?
Oh, yeah. So I'm in the OGAE, which is the official Eurovision fan clubs. I'm in the rest of the world since, you know, I'm not European. And they have the fan club tickets, which are the ones where you see people standing right against the stage during the televised shows. Those are the fan club tickets. And so this year I got another package and I was going to be down there and I already had my spot picked out and everything, but it was not meant to be. I'll hopefully be there in 2021. OGAE is trying to figure out what's going to happen with tickets, whether people get refunds or they're guaranteed for next year's, and it's the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like there's a lot of other things going on in Rotterdam.
Yes.
Ahoy. Right.
Yeah, everybody's like weirdly busy right now.
It's a whole thing, but we shall persevere. Yes. In terms of news, it seems like there's been a lot of stuff that's happened in the last couple of weeks since we last got together.
Yeah, everybody is not it's not just the Dutch, but everybody is kind of just figuring out, okay, so what are we doing next year? And you have things like Finland's like, okay, we're going to still do UMK. Axel will not be getting a fast pass to the final. If he wants to submit a song again, cool. Iceland, Dathi has said that he is done with Songvakeppnin. He won that. And if Ruv wanted to invite him back as the representative for Iceland, he would gladly do that. But he doesn't just want to, you know, win just because he won last year. He wants to win on his own merits, and I get that. I like that. Norway, Ulrike has passed on NRK's MGP fast pass. Austria has said Vincent Bueno is still going to be their representative. Similarly, Romania has also said Roxen will still be their representative. Lithuania, who we were discussing last time, has sort of found a happy medium. They're still going to do Pabandum is now. The Roop have an invitation to a fast pass to the final. It's yet to be seen if they're going to accept that, but yay, we get all the things. Australia has said Montaigne is going to represent them in 2021. Denmark is moving forward with Donk's Melody Grand Prix. Ben and Tan have not been invited back, which, aw. And then people are just having a bunch of reactions about just the whole process and how that's going, because, like, Germany, San Marino, Bulgaria have all said that they're not super happy about the decision. There's been a few rebuttals from, like, the Czech delegation and Germany's entry, Ben Dolich. But we're sort of at the point where, like, everybody is just sort of talking at one another and not really listening, and they might be saying the same things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised by San Marino's response. Like, they're really, really mad about this. And I guess, like, they're kind of really, really mad about something about Eurovision every year, it seems. Like, usually it's about the voting and, like, how, like, their televote doesn't really count.
Isn't as actually a televote.
Yeah. Which is a legitimate concern, but
that one, valid complaint. But yeah, this year, they're just mad.
Yeah, the substitute option that the EBU is coming up with, which we'll talk about in a little bit, since it's not a competition, San Marino is just like, well, why are we even bothering? It's like, oh, that seems harsh. But
when you spend 10% of the country's GDP on 6 pop songs, you expect one of them to actually be put in front of the continent, I guess. I can understand the disappointment from my perspective. I think what this is revealing is that there is a battle for the soul of Eurovision, right? Over the last, I would say, 15, 20-ish years, it went from being more of a song contest to more of a, look at these awesome singers. Look what they're doing. Mm. Ooh, isn't that fun? Look at the dancers. And now when folks are like, why can't we use the same songs? Oh, because it's a song contest, and that doesn't make sense to have a year-old song in a song contest. And folks are upset about that. And on the one hand, it's like, yes, any first-time songwriters or composers who this is going to be their big break. Every year there's usually like a handful of folks where they were just, you know, a random person off the street who wrote a song that happened to be selected and for like the national final, then they won. Mm-hmm. And so I feel for those folks. But for the music maker machines out there, this is just another like, oh, well, I have another 20 songs that no one's sung yet lying around. And this has been an issue I've always felt. And I hope someone brings this to light. It's like the performers, so the singers, the dancers, anyone else on stage can only represent one country. But songwriters can represent as many countries as they want. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, one person can compose all 41 entries or write the lyrics for all 41 entries, which would be impressive, but not at all fair or in the spirit of the contest. So I think what this is bringing out, is this a song contest still? If it was ever a song contest? Or is it, oh, this is just a fun pop music thing that we do, and then we get to choose where we go next year?
That's really interesting, particularly because like a lot of the people who have been complaining or like stating their opinions, that might be a better way of phrasing mm-hmm. it,
yeah,
have been the people yeah. from the songwriting collectives. Like you've got the Symphonics folks, you've got Philip Kirkorov, like the ones who did have multiple entries this year yeah. that they were working behind the scenes. So that is something to think about. I was worried there when you said like the soul of Eurovision and is up for grabs. It's like, oh dear. Like, I don't know if it's
sorry
if it's gotten that dire, but I mean, it's an interesting perspective because it's kind of the same argument about like, well, why don't they have the orchestra playing anymore at the contest yeah. and those sort of arguments and traditions, I guess. But yeah, mm-hmm. it would be interesting to have a, well, I don't know if I actually want to watch a 41 Thomas G. Son contest, but
it'd be no ballots.
Yeah.
that's an excellent point. Like, but why is there like no video game version of this, like Madden, where you could simulate, what if all the songs are written by the same person, sort of like what John Boyes does with just like messing with football yeah. seasons? So, I know why that video game doesn't exist, because I would be the only person to purchase a copy, and that's not how video games work.
I mean, as long as you're willing to pay like $9 million for that one copy.
And honestly, at that price, it's a bargain. Yeah. But also just thinking about the soul of Eurovision, just like, I would read that fantasy novel.
The soul? Yeah. Join Jean Olasson in a quest to find the heart at the center of the contest.
I like the idea of him being the hero and just being so mild-mannered about it, just being like, yeah. oh, there was a mistake.
I'm just like the protagonist is clearly the entry from Montenegro who's brought back behind the curtain and learns the dark secret behind the song contest we all yeah. know and love.
Oh, it would just be the kids from D-Mall. Oh, like, whoever the youngest one is and just having...
Yeah, you know what? Like, this is a YA series. That's so sad. This is the YA series I'm calling my agent.
Yeah.
Gonna make that money.
Okay, I'm not posting this episode until Tuesday afternoon, so Ben, get on the phone.
That actually makes me think, is John Olsson gonna stick around for next year, or is he still gonna call it quits and move on? Because this is supposed to be his last contest.
Right. I mean, I would think that the paperwork's already been signed. And I mean, it was weird because like when they announced that like he was leaving and they announced his replacement, they really made it sound like as soon as the winner accepts the trophy, the next person's yeah. in charge. So,
yes.
Yeah. Just to bring it back to our fantasy novel, like the second that the winner touches the trophy, the curse is lifted.
Yes.
The true winner to rule them all.
I have to think that he'd probably be sticking. I mean, this will make the transition a little bit easier in some ways, just because they'll They don't have this pesky contest to get in the way of like showing how to use all of the software. But
on the other hand, I'm just picturing it like the second the video announcing the cancellation was done, he pressed send on the email saying here's all the handover documents. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just like turned on his autoresponder that said that he's out of town.
Yeah. Yeah, he hasn't really commented on anything since the announcement was made. Although there hasn't really been that much to comment on, so
yeah,
we'll see. I guess. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff going on right now. So
what? How is this not the biggest conversation in the world right now? What else could there possibly be?
I don't know. But yeah, I mean, we may hear something on May 8th because that's when the album mm-hmm. is going to be coming out. So
I already pre-ordered mine.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, I need to get on that. Yeah, it was originally supposed to come out middle of April, but mm-hmm. I guess they pushed it back just to have it be a little bit closer to when the actual event would have happened. And probably because like France just released a new version of the song that was a priority. I don't know.
Look, the people have spoken. The people want more French.
Yeah.
gavel, 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 or whatever the French word for gavel is.
Yeah.
I like that we have, like, for back when Serhat was representing San Marino the first time, originally, I Didn't Know was a slower song, and we suddenly had mm-hmm. the disco version that we know and love.
Mm-hmm.
And France mm-hmm. has done a reverse Serhat, it seems, and he did an acoustic radio performance that was very well received. So it does not surprise mm-hmm. me that all of a sudden the song is a little bit more acoustic and has some more French in it.
Yeah. Really, the fact that it has any English in it at this point is kind of weird. Like, it's really jarring to hear it. Cause it's like, oh, I don't know why you couldn't just translate the whole thing into French. I'm sure it would have flowed just as well.
Just like something in John Lundvik's contract as songwriter.
I guess that is a possibility. So, yeah. Songwriters are causing all sorts of trouble this week.
Oh, golly.
There have been a lot of projects that have been popping up just to kind of keep folks engaged. And so many of them are like starting from the fans. Like Eurovision's just being like, oh, this thing is happening. Okay. And Andre, you're doing one of those projects.
Yes, yes, yes. My blog, Eurovision Obsession, celebrating 10 years of Eurovision passion.
Ooh.
Actually, 11 this December. I am holding a tournament. So every March since 2016, me and my closest friend have always done like a bracket because, you know, being Americans, March is tournament time for big major sports,
mm-hmm.
For universities, et cetera, with, you know, trademark names that we can't say. And so, you know, we always did like a bracket and I always just post the bracket onto my blog for folks to use and got some traction on Reddit 1 year and that was kind of fun.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But this year, since there is no contest, I decided like, hey, you know, it would be a really good time to, make this an athlete event as opposed to just saying, here's a thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's cry. Let's just try to do our own tournament. I've always wondered what fans would say. And so we had the first round. That was, you know, all the kind of play-in games for all the lowest seeded. So the way how it works is, you know, it's a bracket. They're divided into two halves by what semifinal they were in or voting in. And then they're seeded according to what the betting odds were on the last day before it's canceled.
Oh, okay.
That was like the piece I was wondering about was like, how did you do the seedings? But that tracks.
Yeah. So odds checker, you know, I went there, looked at the rankings. I would check those every day. And so that is where the seeding came from. And so, you know, I just see them 1 to 20 and 1 to 21 and let them go. So when the miss of the second round, because this is coming out today, I extended the voting till the 8th for the second round. And then on Thursday, the 9th, the third round would begin with the winners from this week's battles. And then this will continue over the next few weeks. And then we'll have a champion by the end of April. And it'd be exciting.
Nice. Yeah. What has been the most interesting matchup in your estimation?
So the first round, France and Portugal were going really neck and neck.
Mm.
And it was really like a last surge by Portugal over the last couple of days that really pushed it over the cliff to win. In the second round, there is Russia versus Ukraine, which is
inevitable.
Fun happenstance, yes. Something like that always happens. Usually it's like Armenia, Azerbaijan.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. This year, yeah. Ukraine and Russia are going against one another in this round, the second round. Only one of them will move forward, and we'll see who that is. And then there have been some other close ones. I don't want to reveal too much,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, some of the matchups this round are, you know, Germany versus Sweden, Norway versus the Netherlands, and Denmark versus Finland, Switzerland versus Latvia, which has been rather close thus far.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. And it's really cool. I wanted to toy around with the idea of doing like a, you know, sports style broadcast, but I think that might be too much for the first year. Maybe next year I'll give more of a play-by-play for each battle.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, and it is interesting to throw the like auto qualifiers in the mix
yes,
with the semifinals that they're participating in, just because, yeah, I mean, some years that maybe they shouldn't be getting the fast pass, you know?
But some years.
Yeah. If the five of them want to give me money, then I will gladly give them buys to the third round. But until that happens.
That's the way to do it. It's like, yeah. if you want to pass in this tournament, you can pay. You can also pay me.
It's not a real bracket unless there's money changing hands, you know? So.
Exactly.
That sounds great. And we'll have a link to the where you can vote in the show notes.
Yes.
And my heart is already broken. San Marino got knocked out in its play-in game. But
that was probably the one I got the most comments from.
Really?
From the people I know personally. They were like, oh, this was a really hard one to choose because, you know, Albania is like a really strong song, but San Marino is just so much fun.
Yeah.
It's generally the comments I would get. And then one person was even like, oh, San Marino probably would have had such a hilarious and awesome staging for Freaky.
Yeah.
Especially hopefully. If the music video is anything to go off of.
Yeah.
It would have been probably insane. Yeah.
What could have been, you know?
What could have been?
Yeah.
I do like that like this year one of the stories on the podcast has been justice for San Marino.
Yeah.
Just between the two of us, always. Mike, just being like
always.
They finally figured out their vibe.
San Marino's the country I always support at the contests every time I go, and even at home. I have a San Marino scarf hanging in my room currently.
Nice.
In my first year in 2014 I went dressed, well, kind of dress. I bought like a white shirt and these blue pants and try to be like, oh, look, I'm San Marino flag. And I bought a San Marino scarf of one that was not good. But yeah. Before I bought the Eurovision one, it was just off of Zazzle's, literally just like blue fabric with like a flag printed on it poorly. but it was enough to get me on TV.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, I know. And I met two like actual San Marinese folks.
Oh, wow.
That was really cool. They're like, yeah, we drove here from San Marino. It's really cool. I was like, that is awesome. And then we got to celebrate when they qualified for the first time ever.
Oh, that's so great.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
San Marino.
Yeah, in terms of other votes that are happening to determine who is the winner of the 2020 contest, RTVE, Spain's broadcaster, held an online vote. And spoiler, Blas Canto won. By like 5,000 votes.
I mean, that's like the one thing you can't do in these. It's like the one thing you can't do is like, even if he wins, you kind of have to go, okay, so we won, obviously, but since we couldn't win at Eurovision, this is the actual winner.
Yeah, I mean,
yes.
It's like when your trivia team has more than six people at trivia night. Come on, guys. You can't win the prize. You have an unfair advantage.
The turnout of this vote was kind of interesting. Greece finished second, which of the 41 entries, or I guess the 40 after Spain, I would not have guessed that. Are we missing something with Greece? Or
I mean,
I mean, Spain is always a hard one to predict. Mm-hmm. I do think a lot of the faster and quirkier songs tend to go there. Mm-hmm. And Greece used to rule the contest, right, in the 2000s, right. In the aughties. Mm-hmm. And so this is a song that sounded like it fell out of 2007, 2005. And so it could have fit in with that. And so I think a lot of the fans were just like, oh, this is like classic Greece and it's fun. And I am a super girl. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of teenage girls probably voted as well. Don't forget.
It's like, whose fan base is the most willing to spam a ballot box?
Yeah. Lithuania finished third in the overall vote. In the semifinals, Lithuania and Russia were at the top of semifinal one, with Lithuania winning by just 2 votes. And then in semifinal two, it was Iceland, Bulgaria, and San Marino. Yay. So
hashtag justice for San Marino. We're starting it now.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess the theory that they do like a quirky up-tempo number,
yeah,
that does that, hold. Oh, so
that tracks.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then this past weekend, Australia's branch of OGAE held their fan poll. Surprisingly, Australia did not win Australia's fan poll. They did. Montaigne did come in second, but it was Iceland who was the winner of that. So not really a surprise there, since Iceland was one of the favorites going in. So
yes,
at this point, results are inconclusive as to who is going to win 2020. Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe Spain would have won if everyone had the option, right?
Yeah. I don't know where to go from that.
But speaking of OGAE,
yes.
Usually every year they have a big fan poll and every club competes and will send in, you know, votes of all the songs' entries, except for the song from their own country, of course. Mm-hmm. And usually, you know, the winner of that does pretty well at the contest. It's usually top five, oftentimes, sometimes even wins. And usually second place does not as well. But this year, I have not seen anything about it. Because normally it would have started up, and you started seeing news about it, right?
Right.
When they canceled the contest. And so, as soon as that happened, I think everyone switched to thinking about tickets. And no one's like, oh, we still have this fan club vote that we need to worry about. Because that would have been probably the best marker and the best unofficial champion, I think, would be like, oh, well, who wins the fan clubs? But if the fan clubs aren't voting, then...
Yeah, that's interesting that they're not doing the fan poll, though, because, I mean, if anything, it's something to do. But, I mean, I have to imagine that it's, like, a major administrative hurdle. Like, how does the voting work? Is it an email thing? Do you go to a website and submit your votes there?
Yeah. Or? I mean, I can only speak for the rest of the world, which is for those of us who live outside of the competing countries, and there's a handful of countries that don't have their own. So San Marino, Montenegro, Belarus, and Hungary, I think, are the ones that don't have their own clubs of every country that's ever participated in Eurovision. Those are the ones that don't have their own. And Morocco. The way how we do it, we send out a poll, and so it's online on the website, actually. They started doing it. You go, and then you say, my 12 points to this person, my 10 points to this person, 8-1. And then, you know, they collate them all, and then they in our Facebook and on our website, will say, oh, this is the outcome of our poll. And then they submit the results to the OGAE International, and then they will just publish the top 10 in Eurovision format. And that's usually how that goes.
Okay.
I would imagine other OGAEs have something similar, whether it's they send in emails or they have an online poll system, because why only give one country points when you give 10 country points when collecting ideas, you know?
Right.
And yeah, so I imagine that's what most of them do. Maybe some of the smaller ones don't, like OGAE Andorra. It's pretty small. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine them.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Probably knows? Just meet at a coffee shop somewhere.
They'll say, hey guys, have coffee.
Who knows? But, you know, maybe they have something. OGAE Luxembourg is small and mighty, but they keep going. Germany actually has 2 because they had a... Yeah, so ESC Club predates OGAE. And so when OGAE formed, a German branch started, and then eventually ESC Club was like, hey, we need, like, we should join together. And they were like, yeah, sure. So there's two official German Eurovision clubs.
Okay.
Every other country only has one, though.
Hmm. Aside from the polls, there's also just a lot of video content that's been popping up in the last couple of weeks since that's all since we can consume at this point.
We're all stuck at home and we all have phones that double as video cameras.
Yes, yes. And
yes.
Eurovision, the actual organization, has put together Eurovision home concerts, which has been really coolly executed, I think. They've only released one episode so far, but they have four Eurovision alumni or soon-to-be alumni that record a version of their entry, and then also doing a cover of another Eurovision song. In the first episode, they had Ryan O'Shaughnessy, who represented Ireland in 2018, Rasmussen, who represented Denmark in 2018, Tamara Tedeska, who represented North Macedonia last year, and everyone's favorite, Slavko from Montenegro, 2017. And considering he didn't make it to the final, I would say he's number one or two in that list in terms of profile. Would you guys agree?
Yes.
Yeah, he is quite popular,
mm-hmm.
Particularly amongst the fans that attend the contest. I met him in Lisbon because he was part of the Montenegrin delegation.
Mm.
And, I mean, he's really cool.
Yeah.
And his voice is hella deep. But he performed at Euroclub, and it was everything that you imagine a Slavko performance would be.
Yeah.
Plus shirtlessness. So, yeah.
He is not shy.
Yeah.
No. And, like, just both of his performances were just, like, full energy, which was great because everybody's in their house. And everybody was clearly allowed to figure out what level of comfort they were fine with doing for a performance in their house.
Mm-hmm.
And Slavko just, like, had props for everything. I was just very pleased.
Yeah, there's a, like, secret Eurovision group that I'm part of on Facebook, and somebody posted the video for it, and, like, specifically the Slavko portion, like, just posting screen grabs of that. And my reaction after watching the video is just like, I really have to wonder what it's like to be his across-the-hall neighbor. Like, I have to think that would be a very interesting and delightful experience.
Well, yeah, I'm just...
Or the person below him.
I was just about to say, because, like, the entire time during his performance of Fuego where he's wearing, like, pogo shoes, I'm just thinking, if he were my upstairs neighbor, and I had to listen to him, like, jumping up and down.
He was on carpet, though, so I have to think that muffled it a little bit. I don't know. I got the sense that he was trying to be considerate. So
I don't know. Like, we are at the point... We're at the point of quarantine where I learned that apparently at, like, from 5 to 6 p.m., my upstairs neighbors are apparently playing a video game that is Irish. It has to be, like, Irish step dancing or something, because all of a sudden it's like a dog who has the zoomies has been loosed above my living room. But yeah, just like every day at, like, 5:31 p.m., just river dance starts above my apartment.
At least it's 5:30 p.m. and not 5:30 a.m. So
true.
Yes. So I just heard back, actually, from UJE.
Mm-hmm.
There is going to be a poll this year.
Ooh.
They just opened the website.
Oh, nice.
The webpage. Not website, webpage for us. So our deadline to get votes in is April 24th, which is definitely way later than we normally do it.
Mm.
So I think things just took a little while to get going.
Yeah.
But hey, we'll have an unofficial winner, and this will go in the fandom forever. I look forward to Eurovision 100, and they'll still be debating who would have won 2020.
Yeah, we're gonna be arguing about this until we're all dead.
Yeah.
And then I will finally have
the universe.
But no, just going back to the home concerts, like, I really like the format because, like, yes, here's me doing my song, and then, like, all of them had been given four choices, or at least had been thrown out to, like, Twitter or just the audience in general, like, what song would you like them to perform?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just seeing, like, what was on offer for each of them was very interesting. And, like, I thought it led to some very interesting covers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, it kind of reminded me of the Switch song thing that they were did as part of the Interpol
I love
that. In 2019. It's like, oh, this is a cool idea. And I'm glad that they're playing with that. And Yeah, and it looks like people are game for it. Coming up in the next episode, which is dropping on Friday, is Leonora from Denmark last year, Axel from Finland, Vassal from North Macedonia, and John Stiers from Switzerland will be part of this episode. And I know Jamala's coming up in a couple of weeks. And yeah, just kind of keep your eyes peeled on the Twitter and Instagram for Eurovision, and you'll be able to see the polls and the results. So.
Yeah, and then if that is not enough Eurovision content for you this week, the day after on the 11th, starting at 4 p.m. Eastern or 10 p.m. Central Europe time, Spain is having a pre-party where everybody is pre-partying from their house. So far, the confirmed list of artists is Leslie Roy, Samantatina, The Roop, Vassal, Victoria, Benny Cristo, Roxanne, and the Mamas. I'm just like, of course Samantatina is going to be there. She is going to just like go door to door and like perform Still Breathing in your house with the backup dancers.
Other online concerts that have been happening. Suri's been doing concerts on her YouTube channel. She did one this past weekend and the weekend before. I don't know how long, like how many weekends she's planning on doing this, but
she has 65 years of songs. It could be a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it, like, I do not want to seem dismissive there. Like the bits I have seen of those has been lovely. Just like everybody on Twitter is going crazy and be like, Suri should do this again. And she should.
Yeah.
She's very talented.
Yeah. And just, I don't know. She was my favorite personality from 2018. Just such a great ambassador for the contest. So, I'm glad she's doing this. And then Victoria, she did an online concert from her living room back on March 28th, which was really well received. That's still available on YouTube. We'll have a link to that. And Iceland also did a really delightful quarantine edition of Think About Things.
That was like the nicest thing to wake up to on Saturday morning was just, oh, this is here and it's great. And everybody seems to be having fun with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then just as far as other things, rewatch parties are happening and it's been delightful to watch every weekend because Eurovision again is happening and we are watching past editions of the contest, including as of last weekend, the 2009 contest, which the EBU uploaded to YouTube so we could do that.
Yeah, that was so much fun. I knew it was something that I knew had been happening, but I just wasn't available to watch, like mentally available. Like I was still in my apartment, but it was interesting watching the 2009 because I'd seen the 2009 contest before in my own viewing. 2010 was the first contest that I followed, but there was like some Friday night where it was like, oh yeah, I'll just throw this on. And it just wasn't the same sort of experience. It's just this kind of blur of songs and just feels kind of out of context. But having the Twitter experience where it's just like, oh, there are other people watching this and just getting back to like when Twitter used to be fun, you know? And yeah, a really delightful way to spend a Saturday afternoon, particularly on something where a lot of people are coming to it from like a nostalgia perspective and a historical perspective. And then other people who are just like, oh, this is the first time that I've seen this. And what is this all about? So,
well, yeah. And like I caught myself. So I was unable to watch on Saturday just because of the glut of wonderful streaming things that are happening right now. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely gonna be there for future editions live so that I can join in the Twitter, but like just watching it from 2020 with completely different eyes just because the way I follow the contest now is not the way I followed the contest
right
10, 11 years ago. And again, to going back to just thinking in John Boy's sports visualization terms, I was just like, oh man, like I want to sit down and figure out, okay, so do we have the data where if we were in a world where somehow Alexander Rybak does not exist, who would have won this? Like how would points
I've had many of those conversations.
How would points be redistributed? What would that look like? So I have no clue if there are the numbers to crunch that, but that could be.
Yeah.
Because like for a while that was like the record breaker until the score system.
And I think it still holds the records percentage wise.
Yeah.
I don't think Portugal beat it that way. So yeah.
Yeah, and it was also just a completely different voting mechanism. Like it wasn't the split points. And was that a year where they were still doing all televote?
No,
that was
2009 was the first year they did combined 50-50.
Yeah, because there
were final scores.
Because I was reading about that because of Eurovision again. And was like, oh, yeah, that was the first year that they brought it back to a 50-50 split.
How did they tabulate the results so quickly then? Like, why was their interval so... Well, I mean, I'm glad that their interval was so short, but it's like, why like, why has that tradition not continued? Like,
I have some thoughts on that.
The interval was short, but the opening was very long.
Yeah.
That was just a journey that I had completely put out of my brain.
But you don't want to see Demon Balan running around the world?
It was so weird. And it also was just like, oh, wow, Russia had higher Cirque du Soleil as the opener money.
Oh, yeah.
But that is happening. The 2019 contest is still on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody is sort of getting their ducks in a row for, hey, what are we going to air like the second or third week of May? What does that look like for us?
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody is sort of rolling out their plans. The official broadcast that a lot of people are picking up, Europe Shine the Light, will be live from Hilversum. And again, a lot of nations are just like, yes, we will show this. Germany is organizing the Europe Free Song Contest because they wanted to do that. They were one of the ones who was just like, we don't love what we're doing with it this year, so we're going to go do this own thing that will also use these songs. And that's great for Germany. Sweden is also hosting a thing called 12 Points. Hey, that might be viewable on SVT Play. That could be fun to watch. They are going to host a thing this year, dang it. Finland is doing a Eurovision Diaries documentary about the fandom. And during Eurovision Week, as part of various specials they are holding, they will be re-airing 2006, 2007, and the 2014 contests. So just sort of the just golden years for Finland in the recent decade.
Why did they choose 2014? So 6 was when they won, 7 is when they hosted, and that's the first year I ever saw the contest, so that's also why it's remarkable. But why 2014? They got 11th place.
That was their second best finish. Finland's finish was...
The finish was good.
Yeah, no, because I had the exact same question. It's like, oh, well, man. I really like that entry that year, but why 2014? Also, like, it's the best contest, but...
It is a really good contest.
I don't know what it says about my brain that I saw 2014. Like, well, they probably did very well that year, and then immediately thought of recent years. I'm like, yeah, they have not done that well recently, so that's probably why they're showing that one. Mm-hmm. They would like to show a grand final that they've been in.
Yeah.
And didn't come second last, third last, something like that, like in 2018.
Anyways, and then the UK kind of got ahead of everybody else and said, yeah, we're going to air this thing called Eurovision Come Together, which I'm sure will be lovely and respectful of the songs.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, British humor is notorious for being respectful and reverent.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I can sort of get where San Marino and other delegations are coming from, where it's just like, well, if there's no competition, it's not like, what's the point then? Just because I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of overlap in the retrospective department. Like, how many of these are going to show the skirts getting ripped off of the singers in Bucks Fizz, you know?
Bucks
Fizz. So, but yeah, I'm sure there'll be more news on what programming is going to be offered in the coming weeks, because they do have like 10 hours or so to fill during that week. And well, that's the note we'll end on.
I have a question for you too. Who do you think would have won? Like, if you had to give the three songs that you think had the best chance of winning, in your opinion.
Of actually winning, or what my
of
three
actually
favorites.
Winning.
Okay, yeah. That.
Of actually winning. Yeah. Like, I love Switzerland, but I don't think it would have won.
No. So I'm not sure who my third would be. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think that it was going to probably be a race between who had the momentum between Iceland and Lithuania, and I think Iceland would have had enough of the legs to do it. And then, I could see third just being something like Russia, where it's just like, okay, yes, this is... they were being very calculated this year, and I see what they were doing.
I really feel like Bulgaria was in the mix.
Oh, yeah, Bulgaria would be a good third, too. Bulgaria was in the mix.
The second that song dropped, it hit number one in the betting odds. Like, it knocked Iceland out of it and took number one in the betting odds.
Yeah.
Sorry, I cut you off, Mike.
No,
what
no.
The other two you're thinking?
I'm pulling up my spreadsheet just to be reminded of things. Yeah, Israel was another one where...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, like, interesting.
I don't know if that one would have been top three, but yeah, I think that was one that was probably going to depend on where it landed in the running order. And really, yeah. Netherlands, I love that song, and I love...
It's a tearjerker.
Yeah, yeah. And I think they were making a legitimate go of it, unlike the running theory where it's like, oh, well, as the host country, I do not want to host again. But I think Netherlands had a shot. But yeah, I mean... Realistically, it was probably going to be between Iceland and Lithuania. And unless there was like some sort of weird vote split thing and somebody else was going to Jamala their way to the top.
Well, I think that's very possible because Lithuania and Iceland both have quirky songs with quirky dances.
Yeah.
So I think Lithuania might appeal more to the older 50%. Of the Eurovision fandom, and Iceland might appeal more to the lower 50%, the younger 50% of the fandom. So it's very possible they could have split the votes. I think it would come down to how the juries would have ranked them. I definitely think Iceland could have won. This very much could have been their year. I personally am not convinced that Lithuania had the gas in the tank. I think it would have been 2006, like when they sent We Are the Winners and finished like in sixth place.
Yeah.
I think it would have ended up like that, personally. Just because their particular dance is kind of silly. I think, aside from Iceland, I think Bulgaria also, I think the fact that it just jumped to the top of the betting odds immediately. I mean, is one of the most current songs we have ever had. I mean, she sounds like Billie Eilish. Like, it sounds like, you know, it fell off of the pop charts into Eurovision, which is what we need more of, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then this is going to surprise people. So in 2018, I was, as far as I could tell, the only person who thought that Austria had a significant chance to win. And everyone's like, oh, Austria just be lucky to qualify. And what ended up happening, they won the jury vote and came third.
Right.
The same feeling I had for that song is the same one I have for Poland for this year, Empires.
Really?
I think if she fixed her live performances, especially given like how powerful the music video is, I honestly think that Poland could have surprised a lot of folks and made a lot more contention than people would think. I mean, people didn't care about Fuego until rehearsals started, and we all know how that turned out.
Oh, yeah.
too, right? So Fuego, I think, was like 15th or 20th in the fan vote, and then finished second because people were like, oh, God, the dance, the staging. Oh.
Yeah.
So I think Poland could have pulled that off this year. I think the song's the same quality as Austria's 2018. I think they have the staging potential of Fuego, but, you know, powerful and sad and evocative.
Yeah.
As opposed to like sexy, hot, and empowering.
Yeah.
So.
Unless he did decide to go full Fuego for, like, just as a real shocker.
That would be so weird.
I was working on all these hair flips for nothing. Oh.
My neck is so sore. Yeah.
It's a jury consideration that I think would have really. I think you're right that would have made a big difference because I think Iceland has a lot more. Technical stuff going on than Lithuania. Just like I just think of the backing vocals in Iceland's entry. They're so spot on. And
every time.
Yeah.
Every time.
Like even with the quarantine video. Like it's like that I mean, granted that could have been edited in a certain way, but I don't think it was. Like of course. They're just very solidly that good vocally.
From a composition perspective, like the way the song kind of builds and moves throughout its 3 minutes is just really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a well-made song. And it makes it even sadder because Reykjavik is so cheap to get to.
Yeah. Well, cheap to get to, but then once you're there.
Yeah. But, I mean, especially from the U.S., it's like every international airport is like, oh, we go to Iceland now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And anything that you'd like to plug before we head out?
My Eurovision tournament will be going on throughout the entire month of April. That's eurovisionobsession.wordpress.com. Come check it out. Come vote. Voting for the second round ends on Wednesday, the 8th of April. So please come and vote in the second round and then come back the following day to see who qualified and vote in the third round. My goal is to hit over 150 total votes by the end of this thing. So help me get there. eurovisionobsession.wordpress.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And that's going to do it for this episode of the EuroWhat. Thank you for listening. The EuroWhat podcast is hosted by Mike McComb, that's me, and Ben Smith.
That's me.
You can find us on our website at EuroWhat.com and on Twitter and Instagram at EuroWhat. We'd love to hear your comments, questions, and topics we should talk about in future episodes. You can subscribe to the EuroWhat on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcast app of your choice. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to try to make sense of what's new in Eurovision.